Hello again. I'm Stephen Saunders, an associate lecturer at the University of Central Florida. I'm a licensed psychologist and have been in practice since 1998. These podcasts are from a series of lectures I give in my teaching capacity at UCF. Copyright 2019, all rights reserved. If you'd like to contact me, you may do so at wstephensaunders@ucf.edu or call me at 352-406-0506. Enjoy the podcast. So the mortality rate is the probability of dying in any one year. So what's the mortality rate for any given year? Morbidity rates, illnesses, and disability, common health conditions that contribute to all of those. Younger adults are twice as likely as those over 65 to suffer from acute illness. Do you know what acute illness is? No, nothing to do with it would be really cute. No, you know, there's acute and chronic. It's a sudden onset, and it's happening right now. Where chronic means you've had something that's gone on for usually more than 6 months, and it's just kind of on and on and on. Chronic illnesses, such as heart disease, shows age-related increases. And disability is determined if illness interferes with daily functioning. Across either something called ADLs, which is activities of daily living. So this is things that often after an older person or even a younger person has had some kind of accident and they're in rehab, they do what's called an ADL evaluation. How has their activities of daily living been affected? And where I work some of the time up in Leesburg at the Leesburg Regional Medical Center, we have a rehab part where they have a whole mock-up of a kitchen and all the things that a person has to do during a regular day. And occupational therapists specialize in this. And so when a person has had a stroke, part of their rehab is to help to retrain them to do common things like, show me how to boil water. So they'll take a pot out and they'll fill it with water and they'll put it on the stove and they'll turn the stove on. And hopefully they can do all that safely. And it's interesting to see people attempt to do something very common. And when your body is not answering to commands that it used to answer to, it can be very frustrating. And then there are instrumental activities of daily living. And those are using tools and figuring out how to drive and all of that sort of thing. So some chronic conditions, high blood pressure in blue is men and women are in this gray. I guess they didn't want to be two sexes and didn't make it pink. High blood pressure, arthritis, heart disease. Men are a lot more likely for that. Memory impairment, men, stroke, asthma, chronic bronchitis, and emphysema. So many housing alternatives exist with different levels of care, like retirement communities. And it's interesting because I have a lot of people who come to my office for depression and wanting to get therapy and such. And a lot of times it's simply a loss of meaning that occurs in their life. Especially a lot of older people who live up north, they work and work and work. They put their 30 years in and they retire. And their whole life has been centered around retiring, moving out of the industrialized north down to beautiful sunny Florida so they don't have to shovel snow anymore, and retiring here and playing golf all the time. Well, the first few weeks and even first few months is wonderful. You're on vacation all that time. And then suddenly it kind of begins to seep in. This is the rest of my life. And I'm going to go play golf yet again today. And no matter how many different kind of courses you play, it's really the same kind of thing you're doing. And so after about a year of time, they show up at my office and they're like, I am as depressed as I have ever been in my whole life, and I don't know why. And I've begun to develop this profile of things to ask, and I'll almost immediately ask, well, what month last year did you retire? How did you know I retired? I just kind of had a feeling. But it's things along those lines. So they sometimes there's retirement communities, I don't know if they are a blessing or not. I tend to believe that it's better for people to remain in the community to which they had lived most of their life and to stay active and engaged in that community. Because in a lot of ways, I think it's a loss to the community to lose older people. It's a loss of wisdom and experience and a lot of different things. You've got congregate living facilities, and they have a lot of different levels. There is a facility up in Leesburg that has condos, totally independent, will ignore you, you're totally on your own, kind of independent living. Then they have independent living with daily medical care, if necessary. Basically, a nurse comes in or a certified nursing assistant comes in and says, did you take your medicine? Let's take our medicine, and that's that level of care. Then they have assisted living facility, which are apartments, but it's more like a boarding house. You get your meals provided for you. There is housekeeping, and you get your medical care and such going on. And then there's a skilled nursing facility, which is skilled medical care that is much more like a hospital setting that treats people with chronic disorders or those who have profound deficits in their skills of daily living. So they just simply are not able to take care of themselves, or they're not able to be safe any longer.
Do you know anything about, isn't there like an adult daycare there? Like, do people drop off their elderly at the adult daycare for the day? Like, you want to?
There are adult daycare facilities. Yes, there are. Mm-hmm. There are adult daycare facilities. So there, because sometimes you can have an elderly person who can still take care of themselves as far as all of their hygienic kind of concerns is that sort of thing, but they have a cognitive impairment that doesn't allow them to be unsupervised because they can be unsafe, or they may have a memory deficit that they'll just wander away and then not have any idea how to get back home.
Voluntary though to go there? Because I can't imagine anybody that would want to check themselves into a daycare.
That would be like a case of a child, a younger sibling, taking care of the elder and not being able to take care of the person during the daytime. So they would drop them.
Sometimes it can be that way.
Either that, yeah. Or the elderly would actually want to conversate and associate themselves with that community.
It depends on how you spin it as well. You can, you know, I know a lot of older folks who go to those sorts of things, but they say, oh, I'm going to the club, you know, or I'm going to go be with my friends. And, you know, it depends on how you look at it, I guess. I mean, I don't think any of us would want to go to adult daycare.
Or just sit around watching right? The club TV all day. If I had a chance.
There you go. All right, so there are other things that affect morbidity rates, illness and disability, is self-rating of health. There's some validity. Problems with self-rating of health. Often older people tend to rate their health as much, much better than it actually is. And others may rate it as much, much worse than it actually is. I know my grandmother-in-law was constantly, what are they doing over there? I guess so. It does. They're having more fun than we are. So we're the elders. We're going to go over and join elementary education. Okay, so old age and disability in context. All older adults do not suffer from disease or disability. There's a lot of people who age very well and leave the world the way they want to leave it, which is what I hope to do. Here is a photo of an actual elder. For those of you who have not seen one, this is their natural habitat. It's in Boca Raton. No, I'm just teasing. She doesn't have any kind of radio collar on, though, so we won't be able to track her.
There's no way that house in Boca Raton.
No. So specific diseases, there's cardiovascular diseases, cancer, Alzheimer's disease, tobacco use can contribute to that. Unless you're George Burns. You know, George Burns lived to 100. Never that we know of developed cancer, smoked his cigars daily. Well, that's true. So overall, aging and physical disease. So cardiovascular disease. There's coronary heart disease. There's atherosclerosis. The coronary arteries slowly become blocked. That's due to the bad cholesterol. All those years of deep fried chicken and Crisco and lard finally caught up with some people. Not a normal part of aging. This is the number one killer for women in the United States, and that gender differences can be noted in heart attacks. Here's an actual man getting an actual physical exam. Some of these pictures, I'm not sure why they put them in there. I didn't make these slides, so I'm sorry. So cancer is rapidly accelerated, uncontrolled cell division, and is caused by a series of mutations or genetic errors at the cellular level. Again, you know, people, whenever you think of disease, we always think of something on the outside invading us and causing this to happen. And certainly there is outside forces that can invade our body to create these sorts of things. But cancer is one of those diseases that is actually your own body that is turned against itself. This is hard for people to think of because you want to disassociate yourself from cancer in some way. But it happens, and it happens in all kinds of ways. I had a friend who, over the course of a year, became more and more and more progressively depressed to the point of having a clinically based depression that no matter how much medicine they took, it just wasn't touching it. And, you know, they were a good friend of mine, so I certainly was not going to do psychotherapy with them, dual relationship and all that. But I recommended, I said, this is strange. You know, it seems like it's almost beyond what you would normally expect. You know, why don't you go get a good physical? And when's your last physical? And it was like 4 or 5 years in the past. So he went to go get a physical. And for whatever reason, the physician kind of got suspicious and said, why don't we do an MRI on you? And he's like, what? An MRI for what? He goes, let's just do one to rule out some things I'm thinking of. So they did an MRI, and his entire brain had been displaced by a tumor the size of a tangerine. And it was actually pressing his brain and all the way against the other side of his skull. As soon as they saw this MRI, they immediately scheduled him for surgery the next day and prepped him. And he was just like, oh, geez, you know, what a crazy thing to happen, because you think this is going to be the end, or am I going to lose functional capacity? Is this, and as sophisticated as our imaging technology has become, there's a lot that they can't see, especially with those sorts of tumors, so they don't actually know until they get into your skull how invasive this thing really is. You know, it could have invaded his brain and actually been inoperable, but they don't know that till they get in with certain types. Luckily, this tumor was entirely and completely encapsulated within itself, so they were able to remove almost the entire thing with just very few residual cells left. And they took this entire thing out, and it was as large as a tumor, but benign. And it was simply his own cells that had grown uncontrollably. And had been this had been going on, they say, growing for about 10 or 11 years, probably. And it finally, because of the depression and because of other physical things that were going on, began to show up as symptoms. And he actually got written up recently in a medical journal because this was such an unusual case. They had not seen a tumor of that size that manifested so few physical symptoms. But he had a dramatic personality change after this for the better. His depression completely lifted. He became almost like he got a bounce from it. He became almost hypomanic with it. And for 6 months after that, every time his wife would complain about some behavior of his, he goes, "Hey, I had a tumor. What do you want from me? Leave me alone, you know? Give me a break." So she said, "All right, all right." But it was interesting to see that. And it's interesting to see how things like that can affect us and affect our behavior. All right, so cancer is the secondary leading cause of death for adults in the United States. Lung cancer is the leading cause for cancer death for both women and men. And the incidence of cancer increases with age because, again, it's mutation and the breakdown of DNA is what cancer really is all about. And as we age, those things begin to happen more readily. Alzheimer's disease is a progressive, incurable deterioration of key areas of the brain. They believe that they're getting very close to creating a preventative kind of therapy for Alzheimer's that will stop the plaques from building up in the brain that cause these tangles in the neurons that cause them to atrophy and pull away from one another. And they believe that that is what causes the memory breakdown. So this is truly a disease of old age. 90% of all cases of Alzheimer's develop after age 65, although there have been documented cases of Alzheimer's disease in people as young as 35. But that's very rare. Mostly they are occurring at much older age. It's the fourth leading cause of death in the major type of dementia. New medications can slow the progress of Alzheimer's. Medications like Aricept and Namenda, you might have seen them advertised on television. "Oh, Grandpa was drifting away from us until we got him on Namenda, and now he's back again." Well, it doesn't exactly do that. What they are is they actually increase the levels of certain key neurotransmitters like norepinephrine, dopamine, and serotonin. And it's believed that by increasing and making available these neurotransmitters more readily in the body, it enables the neurons you have left to be more active and retain more memory and slow the progression of the buildup of those plaques and such. What they found is that if you can get someone on them early, it will prevent or slow the progression to the point where you can kind of delay it and delay it and delay it. It doesn't stop it, and it's not a cure, but it can delay it. So brain abnormalities caused by the mutation of some genes. There's senile plaques, small circular deposits of a dense protein, beta amyloids. Neurofibrillary tangles or webs of disintegrating neurons can happen. Early onset, 10% of cases linked to three key genes, and the cause of late onset less clear. You can actually get a genetic DNA test now that will tell you whether or not you have the genetic likelihood of having Alzheimer's. So it's kind of interesting. It's interesting as we're getting more and more able to do this, you know, people are beginning to ask, "Do you really want to know?" And some people will say, "Yeah, I would like to know." Because especially with these sorts of medicines, if you can know, the earlier you can know, then maybe when you hit 60, you can begin taking these medicines and maybe delay the onset. Alzheimer's dementia is clearly distinct from normal aging, and it's very much a disease. We used to, at one point, think that going senile was a normal part of getting older, but it isn't. It isn't. It is a disease, and it is hopefully preventable. And again, a lot of what they've shown is that the more cognitively stimulated you can keep yourself, and the more intellectually challenged you can keep yourself, even into old age, the more you're likely to keep your faculties. So word about tobacco use is the number one way to ensure a long, healthy life is not to smoke. Don't smoke. Tobacco can cause many types of cancer. Smoking rates in the U.S. have gone down, but they have gone up in other countries. So although the risk of having some diseases increases with age, no one of these specific diseases is an inevitable part of aging. There's a lot we can do now early on. And I think we're a lot more health conscious now than preceding or earlier generations really were. Yeah, you know, part of the problem is our buffet society in some way. We're built genetically to conserve fat, and this made sense. You know, our ancestors who were able to store up a lot of fat for winter, then when food was not as readily available, they were able to survive. And, you know, all the ultra thin people who weren't able to conserve a lot of fat, you know, they died out. And so we have this propensity to do that. But when you live in a society that really is as wealthy and as prosperous as American society is, and has such availability of cheap food, and you consume and you consume and you consume, and you know, food manufacturers, they do studies of knowing what people want and crave and such, and we crave sweet and salty things. And the saltier and sweeter it is, the more we want it. You know, that's why we love all those potato chips and Doritos and Funyuns and circus peanuts.
There's a CSA commercial that said that the average vegetable for a child, I forgot how old it was, for a child was in the best French fries.
Yeah. Sad. But, you know, we all have to take personal responsibility for not only ourselves, but for our families as well. I mean, I have a choice to take my kids to the Subway or to not take my kids to the Subway.
That's my point. They don't know. The kids don't know that they need that. Because your children, the parents aren't willing to pay them $1
every night. They need to wise up, don't they? Well, what's happened is because our society also is so litigious, you know, McDonald's and a lot of these fast food places are wising up and at least offering healthy alternatives to a lot of their things like French fries. You know, and Burger King now has a container of apple slices that look like French fries. They do. They're cut like French fries, but they're apple slices. And they're not fried. They're just apples.
They call them apple fries.
Right. They call them apple fries.
Uh-huh.
All right, so what about mental health? There's a prevalence of mental disorders, and it seems to be constant across all age groups, although different disorders are predominant at different ages. For example, anxiety disorders. So in the major symptoms of anxiety disorders are feelings of fear and dread when no obvious danger is present. Panic disorders, sudden episodes of intense apprehension, shortness of breath. But, you know, I guess it really depends on what you've experienced in your life. I know whenever we would encounter anything, I remember as children, and I would say, wow, you know, that seems scary. And I would ask my grandfather, does that scare you? And my grandfather would always say, son, after fighting the Japanese, nothing scares me, you know. So I guess it's all relative. So phobias are fears and avoidance out of proportion to the danger, and generalized anxiety disorders, chronic, persistent, and excessive worry. Obsessive compulsive disorder, guilt and anxiety over certain thoughts. Agoraphobia. 20% of older adults suffer from some kind of anxiety disorder.
I don't remember going up.
Do you think it's gone up?
I took Adderall on the site 2 months ago, and it's like 45%.
Of all adults.
Okay.
That's true of all adults when you take the entire population. But this is looking at just older adults, you know, those who are 60 years old and over. And this is current as of 2007. Race of phobias tend to increase with age. I guess with wisdom comes awareness of there's a lot more to be afraid of, maybe. I don't know. High rate of comorbidity between anxiety and depression. Those things often go hand in hand. That's why many of the medications they give to treat depression also have a secondary effect of treating anxiety, like Paxil, Celexa, Cymbalta. They all treat depression and anxiety. The harm avoidance gene has been linked to both anxiety and depression. This gene is thought to determine the effectiveness of serotonin. So, you know, serotonin is the neurotransmitter that some have linked to mood. Depression is a mood disorder typified by a long-term pervasive sense of sadness and hopelessness. Hopelessness is the number one indicator of possible dangerousness, especially as related to suicide. So that's how I was trained as a psychologist to screen for whenever you're doing any kind of suicidal screening or suicidality or the likelihood of dangerousness. The more hopelessness a person expresses, the more likely they are to carry out a plan of suicide. Some difference in types of symptoms older adults report. Like, for example, they may report more physical symptoms rather than mental symptoms. Well, I don't feel good. I hurt. But no real difference in response to treatment. Older adults respond to both medical and psychotherapy treatment just as well as younger adults do. This is an actual depressed younger adult. So there's a clear instance in suicide with age, clear increase, I mean. Elderly white males are more likely to commit suicide. Some predictors of suicide: depression, living alone, anxiety and other emotional problems, and medical problems. You know, so I've known older folks who just, their idea was, I'm never going to go to a nursing home. And when they saw themselves to begin to decline, they made sure they never went to a nursing home. Substance abuse disorders. Dependence on drugs or alcohol. More common in men than in women. Impulse control disorders. They tend to affect a person's judgment to control harmful impulses. A person may also have ADHD or oppositional defiant disorder as young adults with impulse control disorders, more prevalent in males than in females. So some common treatments of mental health disorders. Number one is psychotherapy. Psychopharmacological treatments or medication can also be helpful. And then there are all kinds of alternatives to those. I found that in a lot of my patients, massage can be almost as effective as a lot of them report as effective. I want to do a study like this as medication does. There's something about touch when they're depressed that seems to be very helpful, and that's certainly an alternative to medication. All right, so there are also individual differences in health that run across gender, socioeconomic, race, ethnicity, personality and behavioral patterns, genetics, developmental origins, and then we'll put you on the road to good health before you leave tonight. Women die at older ages of basically same diseases as men. Women have more disability and more non-fatal chronic diseases. Women have a higher incidence of most psychological disorders, they say. But it may be to what we were talking about. This is, has always been very controversial because women are more likely to report feeling depressed and report feeling anxious than men are. Men have higher rates of alcoholism, substance abuse, and suicide. So, you know, maybe they're internalizing things and deciding to self-medicate. The differences in medical disorders are both biological and social, and they're more difficult to explain these differences in emotional disorders, but it may simply be something as simple as just reporting effects. So chronic conditions and physical limitations show more rapid and extreme changes with age among poor adults. And that makes sense in a lot of ways of things we had just talked about, access to health care, a lot of those different kinds of things. A substantial portion of social class differences in health can be accounted for by various variations in health habits like smoking or poor nutrition. Now, why is it things that are bad for you are cheaper? You know, organic foods that are allegedly the best for you are very expensive. Have you ever gone to Whole Foods Market or Fresh Market or any of those highfalutin grocery stores that have all that wonderful stuff that's really good for you? I love those stores. But boy, you can't get out of there. Now you go to Walmart and you can get out of there for a tenth of the price. Yeah.
I have an answer to that.
Okay.
There's a friend of mine from an Orange Grove.
The problems with the reason we can support 6 billion people on this planet is because of all the chemicals and because of the advanced farming techniques we have developed over the last 200 years. You know, when you add artificial fertilizers like, you know, ammonium nitrate and that sort of thing to the soil, it's not necessarily the best thing in the world for the environment, but it can quadruple your crop yield. And that's what you're talking about, you know, to be classified as organic, you can't add any of those things. And so the trees and the plants go to producing what their natural levels are. You're not going to be able to feed 6 billion people on organic produce unless we go to eating some kind of yeast paste or something like they do in the Matrix.
Yeah, it slows down the process. It's not growing as many oranges as when he was dumping the chemicals on it. So it's a slower process for him.
So there are also ethnic differences that exist in prevalence of various diseases. And there is healthy immigrant effect. Those who come to the U.S. from other countries tend to be in better health than those who were born here. That's interesting, isn't it? Also, what they found is worldwide, as we export our culture, as Americans export our culture, it impacts traditional cultures and they become less healthy. A good example is Japan. Those Japanese who follow a very traditional Japanese way of eating and exercise and that sort of thing live longer and are healthier. All the Japanese that live in Tokyo and very westernized regions of Japan and partake of a Western lifestyle, American lifestyle, tend to be less healthy. So beta blockers for heart attack patients tend to be higher given more on a regular basis for white folks and black folks. Follow-up for care for mental patients tends to be greater for white folks and black folks, and eye exams for diabetics. So there's disparity along those lines. And how do you account for those, do you think? I mean, historic racism could be a part of it. Mistrust of the medical profession perhaps could be part of it. So personality and behavioral patterns as well. There's the old typical type A personality. Achievement striving, competitive, feeling extreme time urgency, easily provoked to hostility. Have you ever known anyone like this? I've had a few bosses like this. People who are type A are at a greater risk for chronic heart disease. And direct or indirect links between type A behavior and the development of those diseases. Optimism. We talked about this a little bit earlier with the octogenarian kind of study. People with a positive outlook on life are less apt to suffer from serious physical illnesses and less likely to die prematurely. So optimism pays. Even if the world is going to hell in a handbasket, it pays to at least pretend that it's not, right? So health habits play a major role in the rate of physical changes in aging, degree of good health, or how long one will live. Regardless of childhood experiences, those who follow basic health rules have a good chance of aging successfully. That's good news for all of us. So you could have had a really rough childhood, but decide to turn over a new leaf, and our bodies are very resilient. And it's amazing. To me, what's amazing is how well people heal. You know, how we heal and bounce back from things. Exercise plays a large role in preventing disease and disability. However, the majority of results do not exercise sufficiently to acquire health benefits. Okay, getting on the golf course, hitting a ball, and then jumping in the golf cart and riding to the ball, not necessarily exercise. You know. So, you know, you've got to get your cardiovascular system going and your heart rate up to get some benefits from that. So there are genotypes that may influence health. Genetics always plays a role. Then there's the developmental origin hypothesis. Early years, health effects later years. That's why there's a big emphasis in public health with trying to get pregnant women to do the right things as far as taking prenatal vitamins, particularly folic acid. Do you know why folic acid, which is one of the B vitamins, why that's so important in pregnant women? For brain and spinal cord development. Exactly right. They've actually gone to adding folic acid to all bread. You can't buy bread anymore that doesn't have folic acid added into it. And the government mandated this, the FDA did, as a preventative measure for women, and especially poorer women, who may not necessarily be going to a doctor or getting adequate treatment. But there are so many programs now in this country where even the poorest of the poor women can get low-cost or free medical care if they're pregnant to prevent these sorts of things from happening. Because folic acid is extremely cheap, but trying to care for a child who is born with severe birth defects is very expensive. So it makes economic sense for the government to do that as well. And there's intergenerational effects. So your mother's prenatal health, for example. So the road to good health, eat healthy, get regular checkups. Have you ever gone online or on YouTube and seen any of these soundboard prank calls that they've done? Do you know what a soundboard is? It's a There's a soundboard is really nothing more than a collection of sounds that if you click on it with your mouse, they instantly happen. And there's a Mr. Rogers soundboard that has all these different kinds of quotes from Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, on there. People call up people at random, or they'll get a telemarketer call and they'll put Mr. Rogers on there. But there's this crazy thing that he does where you can ask people, have you ever had a checkup? And they go, what? And you're talking about your Verizon long distance calling or something along those lines. You've got to see it on Google, YouTube, Mr. Rogers prank call. I was laughing so hard I was crying. It's pretty funny. Exercise? Yeah, I'm a chronic YouTuber.
But Mr. Rogers, like, he's on YouTube. There's one, Coco.
People love him.
Yeah. Mr. Rogers is on there.
I love Mr. Rogers.
It was weird.
Know your family health history. Get early and quality treatment. So getting treatment from some quack, I guess, is not as good as getting quality treatment, right? All right, so there you have it. Any questions? If you have difficulty or you need anything, please feel free to email me, but all this stuff seems pretty straightforward, and you all are so smart, I don't think you're having any issues. I'm sorry?
Is that the famous Carl?
No, he's dead. He died back in the 60s. No, I'm just giving a lecture on him. That'd be awesome. I wish he was alive. I would go see him. Aging and such goes, or
does that actually fall into aging? Or
it can. Yeah, diseases like Parkinson's certainly,
like
ALS, as a person grows older.
Like ALS or something like that. Cause
sure.
My father died when he was 36. I was only 10.
Wow.
So and I guess it's heredity and everything like that. And I was just interested.
Well, I'm not a physician, so I'm not going to give you any medical advice, but certainly. You know, get a checkup.
I was just wondering where it would fall into. It didn't say anything in the book.
Okay.
That's just what I was asking.
Okay. I don't really know if that's even has a genetic link or not.
I read it a long time ago when I was doing. I don't know. Maybe it's changed. I was looking 96. Maybe I did that.
What does the schedule say? Does it say do chapter 2 and 3? Oh, okay. Well, I guess I need to know.
But you see people with the gambler's fallacy with all that kind of stuff. You'll see it happen in blackjack. You'll see it happen in poker. Poker has become such a statistical kind of game, and blackjack is a little bit to that way as well, that you don't see as much of the gambler's fallacy in that, but you do see it happen a lot in pure gambling games. Justice is served. Here's the criminal. Maybe, maybe not. All right. I think we're just about out of time. I'm going to stop for tonight, and we will pick up next week.